My childhood fantasy was becoming friends with a runaway princess and her pet pig. Welcome to New Game Plus. You are listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game, and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
Hey.
Your name is?
Nolan.
And this is episode 148, and this is a Patreon pool episode.
What's that?
Which, yeah, a Patreon pool episode, Nolan, you should know by now, is... every few episodes, we allow some of our patrons to give us their game submissions, and then we randomly select out of those suggestions. So don't go to our Retro Master list. We just pick out of those that much smaller list, and then we randomize from there. And so, so this game that we played for the last 7 days was submitted by multiple patrons, and we played it. We'll be talking about it today.
Interesting.
But before that, being episode 148, we are 2 episodes away from our 3rd anniversary as a podcast.
Wow.
Wow.
That's not okay.
That's a long time. I know, that's longer than we've been friends.
It's longer than I've been alive. And like, it doesn't feel like it's been 3 years. It's weird.
Right. And so we've talked a little bit about it. Kenny, what are we doing for our 3-year anniversary?
He doesn't know.
We're going to blow out all the stops.
What?
For the big 3 years.
That's not what we talked about.
Also, is that the saying, blow out all the stops?
We're
no.
We're going to blow out and blow up.
Here's the thing about idioms. You take them and you force them to your will, and then they work.
Here's the thing about idiots. They say stuff like that.
Continue to tell us what we're doing for our 3-year anniversary.
So instead of a normal episode, we thought we would do something enjoyable. No, we thought we'd do something special for our 3-year anniversary. And so we're going to do a little bit of interactive live. Oh, yeah. Interaction with some of our viewers.
Is it uncut? Live and uncut?
I mean, there will be a version of it somewhere that is uncut.
Ooh. It certainly
will be the version most people listen to.
Straight into the point to help out, Kenny. We are going to be doing a live stream for our 150th episode, which is going to be our 3-year anniversary. So that is going to be September 15th at 10 o'clock a.m.
on
Central
Twitch.
Standard Time on Twitch, twitch.tv/NGP podcast. That's where we do some of our streaming, recording of video content. One, feel free to send us questions in advance, things that we can address as a part of that episode. We won't be talking about one particular game. We'll be talking about the podcast as a whole, our past, present, and future. We'll be talking about various games we played, games we intend to play, and we'll be answering questions live from you if you show up during that time slot as well. We'll probably go for an hour, hour and a half or so, and then we'll cut that down and put that into an episode for episode 150.
It's going to be fun.
Going to be a lot of fun. Before we get into the episode proper today, I saw this question on Reddit this past week, thought it would be good for our initial discussion at the front of this episode. As we prepare to move into a new generation of gaming, which gameplay system trends would you like to leave behind? Which gameplay system trends would you like to leave behind? For example, I loathe more and more this open world concept. I'm not saying to like do away with it completely. A lot of people apparently like that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be in each and every game. Like, please, game developers, give us smaller worlds and better stories, better content, not more content. So just I want to do away with where everyone is just trying to go for this bigger world.
Mine's kind of predictable. I didn't see this question, so this is the first I'm hearing of it. But the first thing that came to my mind was like, and this isn't so much, this is a gameplay trend, like paywalls and cosmetics. Like, I don't need it. I really don't. I really miss just having a single player experience without like anything extra. Now, there are some exceptions to that. For instance, Tekken 7 Season 2 is starting next month, and it's going to be a pretty cheap DLC, but it's giving you so much content. That kind of stuff can stay. But as far as single player games go, like the Arkham series is a good example of all this crap DLC with costumes that I don't want. Yeah. Just don't do it. I don't want
And I'll add on that, you know, like how like video game start screens used to be just this like beautiful like, yes. like trailer that you could see right before you go in, but it's now ads. It's just like flooded with ads and like buy this.
That's such a good point. That happens subconsciously. I never thought about that, right. But it's literally ads.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah, modern games are terrible. We should just play old games.
We should just play old That's games and make a idea, podcast Kenny. About it.
Smartest thing you've Kenny, ever said.
Gameplay trends.
Yeah, I think I was probably, if I was answering honestly, going to sound a little bit derivative to what Nolan said. I won't repeat him, even though it's probably the biggest issue in gaming, is the milking the wallet and then continuing to and intentionally finding ways to do it. It's just not classy. Like, make a product, put it out there, and make it be worth paying for and owning upfront and outright. You can argue that there's sort of side issues there, online requirement in terms in ability to play, and obviously some of those are technical, and and they're there for other reasons, so like I'm not going to get into that whole discussion. In fact, I'm going to shelve that whole discussion because Nolan pretty much covered it, and I will say the lack of good haptic feedback as a trend is what games are lacking.
Interesting.
Yeah, that
expand
is expand
just a little bit. What do you mean?
Oh, I want gloves. Ever since the like NES Power Glove, and now that we've got VR, I want gloves that like let you actually move and like interact. And if I pick up a sword, I want to feel like I'm holding
Kenny's
a sword.
You want to go into the Oasis, is what you want to do?
Yeah, but no, because ugh.
Well, I will say about my point is that gamers are also to blame for demanding games immediately instead of giving developers proper time.
Yeah.
But these companies are so massive now, like they need the income. So that's why they do it. It's just like a tough, it's weird that we ended up here, but
it is. One more trend I'd like to see disappear is good and proper translations. Like, whatever happened to the day where you could play a game and have no clue what's happening because the translated text made no sense and explained nothing?
I miss that.
Like in our retro game of the week, Illusion of Gaia.
Overview.
Already, Kenny, he can't keep it together already.
I just keep thinking about this game and trying to follow the story and what was going on, and I can't stop laughing. I'm sorry.
I wish you could have been there for Nolan's first play or my live streaming sessions, because I've laughed more this week in this game that is unintentionally hilarious than any other game that I've played recently, including our last episode on Conker's Bad Fur Day.
Which is saying something, because that game was intentionally funny and usually pulled it off. No, I actually creeped on your live stream for a little bit, but didn't stay
but
too long.
But don't say anything.
Don't creep, Kenny. You're part of this
Be
podcast.
A person.
He doesn't have a Twitch account.
I was doing other stuff. Like, I couldn't interact. I was busy.
Actually, you totally have a Twitch account, Caleb. I know you do.
He does?
He definitely does.
Okay, first of all, I'm going to mispronounce Gaia throughout this episode because I have to think really hard in order not to say Gaia.
Okay, yeah.
Either of you?
I don't have to concentrate hard. Someone corrected me and I was like, I got it.
No, see, that's something that like I've always done Gaia. And can it be, like, is that a
It can be.
Thing?
I've heard people say it and I wasn't like, you know, like it's fine. Right. It's whatever.
Okay, I just wanted to say that up front because that's going to happen sure. throughout this episode. All right, so Illusion of Gaia came out in 1993 in Japan, a year later in North America, a year later than in the EU. It was developed by Quintet and published by Enix and Nintendo. It is an action RPG, a JRPG really, that came out on the Super Nintendo and is apparently a sequel to Soul Blazer, which was another popular SNES title, but I don't think anybody would be able to tell that.
How would you know that? Yeah, there's a trilogy. There's a game after this too, and it's like, okay.
Right. From what I gather, it's got some of the same themes, you know, kind of like Final Fantasy Crystals, but, you know, that's a common theme, but there's no like characters or story that is connected. I don't know, but
I don't know.
Apparently it is. Now for the plot, like I could try to tell you the story, but I'm going to be honest, I don't really know it. And if I did try to explain it, it wouldn't make any sense.
We should try though, and then just let it be funny because
I mean, I can, okay, but here's the thing. There are mystery dolls, ink and ruins, a talking flute, an evil comet, and the Tower of Babel all within the first 5 minutes.
And pigs. And a pig.
And a pig that has a major role to play throughout this game.
Gosh,
psychic powers and friendship and all kinds of good friendship. Things.
And herb?
As well.
And herb?
And her? This game is silly, crazy. I mean, they try to go with some of these JRPG tropes. They try to, like, okay, so it's a group of kids that are going to have to save the world. That's what's happening.
And sure.
But what's happening is that the thing that is so confusing.
The main character lost his parents. Like, it leans heavy into stereotypes. Yeah.
The thing that's so confusing is that it drops so many of, like, these huge things that are happening on you without any kind of context.
No context.
So it's like, okay, so, like, yeah, so your main character is Will. He lost his parents, but his dad was lost at their visit to the Tower of Babel. Will is the main character. He doesn't remember much of that visit at all, although he was on that trip. And so then he's like, he's given a letter to go to the castle. The princess is missing, but then she shows up in his house with her pig. And then he gets put in prison, falsely imprisoned. And then he's got a flute, apparently, and it starts talking to him. It's his dad's voice, and his dad's telling him to do something because he's got to stop this comet that's
coming.
But
it can play magical songs and also be used like a sword.
Yeah, and so, like, I mean, seriously, I don't want to. I mean, if we keep going, we're just going to confuse people more.
That's all I wanted you to say is get up to that point.
Yeah,
that your dad's
the whole game is summed up for me in terms of, like, how it goes about telling stories in that initial opening screen where you're in the classroom and the teacher, like, talks to the students and dismisses the day and then is like, "Oh, there's demons that showed up outside of town. Don't go out without your parents."
Yeah.
Like, no context.
As long as you have those parents, you're going to be able to do battle with those demons.
Yeah, don't
for
worry
sure.
about it.
But then, like, 5 minutes later, they let Will run across the country. No big deal. Because we don't know why.
Well, you've got a letter from the king at that point. But
Here's the thing.
This story is all over the place. It's very fantasy, you know, fantasaical in nature. It's a version of Earth, but a very weird and distorted one. And the reason why I'm saying a version of Earth, because you've got, like, you visit the Incan ruins, you visit the Great Wall of China, the Egyptian pyramids, you go to some of these key places.
Yeah.
And that is able to, like, evolve this story in which you can, you know, stop this comet, stop evil, save the world. Very JRPG, but multiplied by 10 on the craziness scale.
And as you also mentioned, not translated super well. And so not only is it trying to tell this story in, like, a weird contrast of taking way too much time to do story elements in, like, actually what's going on the screen, but then not giving it nearly enough dialogue. But then the dialogue that is there is weird, and you could tell they were trying to communicate some things that they didn't actually communicate effectively. Like, what?
Translation was really, really hilarious, and we'll get into that some.
Gameplay.
I'm just going to start this section off with this. I was watching Dustin live stream this week, and he made a comparison that I didn't really like, but
you left the Twitch channel.
I'm open to discuss after considering and thinking about it. So, Dustin.
It's interesting that you bring it up, although it hurts. And I understand it hurts. Like, if there... Because there's been other games that we could compare to some of my beloved classics, and it would be painful.
I wasn't even there, and I'm going to say you compared it to Zelda.
Yes, you're right.
Yes. Some of the early Zeldas, simply because a lot of this game is set up in that you are in these quote-unquote dungeons, whether or not it's a dungeon, it's set up like a dungeon,
where
you're in various rooms, and you can't progress until you kill all the enemies in the room. Even you've got a start screen, a start menu, and when you press that, it shows you how many enemies are in the room, how many treasures are in the room, and where the enemies are on the little map for that room.
Yeah.
And so you have to go and defeat those enemies. It's not, it's real-time battle, so, like, it's not like a side thing like you'd get in some of the JRPGs. You're just swinging your flute sword there in the stage, doing certain damage, numerical values pop up. And then you kill the enemies. Once you kill the enemies, you get to go progress to the next area. Yeah. And so that in the way that the dungeons are set up, kill all the enemies, go to the next place. That is very early Zelda.
Yeah, and there are puzzles too in those dungeons, and obviously Zelda is heavily based around puzzles and dungeons and progression and chests, so you're getting chests too. And I'll give it to you. I'll give it to you. I was partially joking, but also it did hurt because we were just making fun of this game hard, and sure. Then you said that. But there's definitely influence from Zelda in this game, like heavy. And honestly, they kind of pull it off in certain areas. I was kind of like, all right, I can get behind this dungeon. Like, the dungeons for me were the highlights.
Yeah, I can totally agree. And I think that there are some things that are comparable to Zelda. So the dungeons and even the fighting style. But then there are some things that are completely different than it. So it's definitely not a copy. I would not say that this is a copy. We played other retro games that are copies of other popular titles. This is not one of them. And so, like, one of the key things that is different is that you have three playable characters throughout this game. You start with just one, who's Will, this little boy who is, I mean, pretty, there's not much special about him outside of after he returned from the Tower of Babel. He has some kind of psychic power, right? Like, he can move things.
Yeah, pretty early you have access to this dark realm, which ends up being the save feature in the game, where you speak to Gaia, this dark god or something. Like, it's, I don't know.
But that dark realm also later in the game allows you to transform into one of these other forms. Yeah. Again, unless I missed it, it does not explain to you why you can do that.
Even when it first happens, no. It kind of just says, oh, you'll understand more about what's happening to you later in the game. Like, it realizes how bad it is and tries to cover it, I think.
Yeah, so
and
it's not just a different form of Will. Like, it's not just he gets powered up. It's like he changes, like, entirely.
It's a new character Completely. Named Freedan with Fabio-like hair, giant bill, giant armor, giant sword. Like,
a longer, really sweet sword, though.
Yeah, longer reach. Like, he's more of like your very stereotypical warrior character. And then very, very late in the game, so I can confidently say we didn't get there, is you can transform into a character named Shadow. Yeah. And Shadow has his own abilities, but I think that he is pretty OP, so you really don't get him till like the one of the final dungeons.
Yeah, I didn't get there, but you, like, even from looking at Shadow's design, it just looks like this godlike, all-powerful version. Yeah. So, yeah, it's just a really strong thing.
Again, none of this is explained as it's happening.
No.
It's just like you go into the dark zone, you see a new statue, you go up to it, and it's like, do you want to transform into Freedan? And you're like, who's Freedan?
I did like the idea of being able to swap forms, especially with one form kind of being your like fighter form and one form being your like manipulate and solve puzzles and interact with things going on. There are things that Will can do that you can't do in the fighter form. And that can be fun to me. I never felt like I had to use that strategically. Maybe later into the game that gets better.
Yeah,
but at least early on, it feels like every time you're given the option to change, you just change.
Yeah.
And it makes it kind of flat.
But I think that that's a good way to introduce it, because you've got to train the gamer to know that that is how a lot of these puzzles are going to be set up.
That's fair. And I'll give them the benefit of the doubt that they might do that a lot better as the game gets significantly further in.
Well, if on the topic of Zelda, it reminded me of like when you're going through a dungeon and you can't progress until you find the item, like the hookshot to get over a gap, you need Freedan in certain areas to progress in the dungeon. And it didn't feel limiting. Like, I was worried that would feel like restrictive and kind of annoying, but it worked.
Yeah, my issue isn't that it worked so much as that it just felt too linear. I wanted, I guess, more ability to make that choice more often and for it to just be a little bit more dynamic. But it was fun that the different things, the different characters you were kind of served different roles. So I like that.
One of the things, you know, talking about these puzzles that I appreciate is that they're challenging. Maybe you wouldn't even think they're challenging, but they're easy enough for me, which is a plus. My brain doesn't think well with these puzzles. I've been playing through Ocarina of Time and some of these other ones where Zelda games are heavy puzzle-based, and a lot of them are not intuitive to me, or I'm not able to discover them or find out without some kind of guide or help. However, in this one, it's relatively limited. Since it limits you to a kind of a space, I'm able to eventually find out and discover most of these puzzles.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Like, the dungeons aren't, like, huge. Well, yeah, they're not huge, and they're not, you're not going to have to sit there and look up a guide. Like, did you look up a guide, Dustin? Because I know that's your thing.
No.
Yeah, they're so simple. And for me, I prefer the Zelda difficulty when it comes to dungeons, but this one works on that level. Like, I'm okay with it. The problem, though, that I faced was that when the dungeon was over, my enjoyment from playing the game just, like, went to zero. Because, like, outside of the dungeons, I'm just like, what are we doing?
You didn't enjoy 10-minute cutscenes where your character just stood on a raft?
No, I also didn't enjoy when you have an overworld literally just to watch your characters auto-walk to the next city. Like, you don't need the overworld map.
Yeah, the overworld was pretty poorly done, for sure.
Here's something that I would say. Like, the story is so convoluted, but the rest of the game is very simplistic mm-hmm. in nature. Mm-hmm. And I think just depending on what kind of game you're looking for, you might either like that or dislike that. But this is a very linear, straightforward game. As you just mentioned, Nolan, there's no real open world map. There's never reason for backtracking. There's no revisiting stages.
There's no grinding.
Right. Yeah, you're not having to grind. A lot of the RPG things that can make RPGs annoying for some people, item management and choosing where to place your stats. Yeah. Now, some of those are things people love, but those aren't here. Your levels happen organically and kind of as you clear dungeons, and it's just really fluid.
Yeah, so you can't even grind because your enemies don't respawn after you clear out a room. So I don't think we mentioned this, but not only when you clear a room does it open up the next area, but it gives your character a permanent upgrade, either to strength, defense, or health. That's interesting to me. I thought that was unique, that there's no, like, experience system. There's no, like, you determine where the point goes to. It's just kind of, like, predetermined. When you clear a room, you get one of those upgrades, one of those permanent upgrades. Yeah. I thought that was interesting.
I kind of like it just based on the fact that it's unique, and it's, like, I haven't seen something like that. And it forces progression, like, in the fact that they tell you early on, okay, we're going to show you where all the enemies are. You need to kill them all. Because, you know, they give you a reason to do that. And then all the while you're collecting DP, those points that will eventually permanently increase one of those stats. So, like, it's very, like, user-friendly for new players, like, even to gaming in general. I was going to say RPGs, but this, like, it's not a traditional RPG in that sense. So, like, it's just very, like, friendly for, I don't know, new players.
For that casual style action RPG, which is what I think they were going for.
Yeah.
You know, like, sit down and run around and hit a bunch of stuff and solve some puzzles and get told this story while you're doing it. I thought the way they handled things at least was really consistent, you know, and it fit. It had one sort of feel, and that fluid leveling and fluid, even going from place to place, though it was janky, it kind of fit.
One of the things that I found unique is that, so over in the States, over here in North America, it's called Illusion of Gaia. Gaia? Gaia,
Gaia,
right?
Gaia.
And in Europe, and I think maybe even originally in Japan, the translation would have been Illusion of Time. And so time is actually a huge motif here, so much so that there are moments in the game where you just have to stand around and wait before something happens.
Worst mechanic.
I don't know if that's so much, I don't know, an element of the game as much as it's poor game design, but there's so much time that you're literally just twiddling your thumbs.
And see, so you think it's poor game design, and I would agree with you, but that's, like, they're not going for poor game design, but they are going for a time element. Because, so you might be referencing in the jail, you just have to kind of wait around. There's nothing to do until something happens there. But later on, after I think you're in the Incan ruins, whatever, yeah. There's, you play your flute, a certain tile flashes, and I didn't know what to do. Like, I stood on it, nothing happened. I tried to place an item on it, nothing happened. What you have to do, I've come to find out, is that you just have to stand there for a good, like, 30 seconds or so or longer before whatever happens is supposed to happen. But there's nothing to tell you that.
That's one gameplay design that did fade out. So you asked us that question at the beginning. That's one that I'm glad is not around because it's pointless. There are other ways of communicating time. A lot of the time it's just a couple minutes later. I don't know, like a transition screen. You don't need to just sit there and click around. But yeah, that was annoying.
Speaking of weird transitions, the transition between characters actually speaking to each other and the narrator speaking in basically the same box where you couldn't know that something else was going on was so jarring to me. Well, it was weird. I'm like, who's talking?
Yeah. It frustrated me because, most characters have their own text color. So you can like associate it with Kara having whatever color she was. And then Will is yellow, but the narrator is also yellow. So sometimes you would have the same text box that said, Will opens the door to his grandparents' home. And then he'll go to like, I want some pie or something. Like, and you're like, wait, are you the narrator? What's happening?
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad idea. Like, I like the idea of there being a narrator, like he's telling the story of what happened because that happens in some of the novels that I enjoy. I think that could work, but the way that they implemented it just didn't work. But I think that goes to the overarching problem that I have with this game. There's a few, but I think part of it is translation issues. But I think part of it is just this script is so poorly written, in my opinion, that, like, here's the thing. So much happens in this game that might not be bad in and of itself, but the game doesn't explain why these things are happening. Okay, so like a talking flute, okay, but why? You can transform into a big boy, okay, but why? Like, there's so many story elements that they're trying to do, but it's just like one crazy thing to the next crazy thing to the next crazy thing without any kind of explanation.
And you posted one of those in Discord this week. You get to the Incan ruins and a text box appears literally out of nowhere. It's a strange voice and they say, guess who? And you have three options. The first one is Cotton Candy's relative. The second one is Birdman, comma. And the last one is Old Man's ghost, dot, dot, dot.
Cotton like, Candy's what? Relative? Are you serious?
That's just straight up bad translation. There's no other explanation for that. That's just what?
I don't know. Points they're trying to go light and provide levity, I feel, but the tension here is that you can't tell. You don't know if they're trying to. You don't know if they're trying to be light or if they're trying to be serious. You don't know if they're trying to be tongue in cheek or if like just things feel so awkward the whole time, which causes it, at least in my opinion, to be unintentionally hilarious.
Yeah.
There were so many times playing this week that I just had to like stop and laugh. I took multiple screenshots and posted them in Discord this week of just the absurdity. There's one moment where you just come up to a barrel and you click on it. Roast. And when you do this, this music comes on and like you found something spectacular. Yeah, like you just got
the best item ever in the game.
And then the text box says, you have the large roast.
Really slowly though.
It's like, still sitting in my my inventory, and I have no idea what I'm supposed to do with this large roast.
Oh my gosh.
Aged.
When you told us last week after Conqueror's Bad Fur Day that we were playing Illusion of Gaia, I was like, oh, this is a huge JRPG title. Like, I've heard so much about this. Everyone praises this game. It's going to be probably, you know, what you usually expect with a... Well, it's not developed by Square, but it was published. It's a JRPG. At least I thought. And then when I played my first play, for 25 minutes, that's how long the first play is, I was confused. And we've already listed why. We've already said the absurdity. So it's like, where does the click happen for these people?
I've seen reviews, and then I started to feel it some in that this opening, the 30, 45 minute opening is
just
a grind.
Yeah.
And it's bad. But if supposedly a lot of the fans would say that if you can get past that it becomes a good game. But I think what they're saying is that some of those gameplay elements that we've mentioned are quality and they age well, the puzzles, even the transformations, some of those things. But that first 30, 45 minutes is all like story based. And so I think that is what ages so poorly. And that's still going to be sprinkled throughout, but it's heavy up front because it's got to set the scene, sure. Right? And so I think that's what is happening here, that the story, the writing, the translation's abysmal. And then the gameplay is actually what's quality, but it takes forever to get there.
It's hidden. Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, this game is a unique case because when I'm talking about the age and how it aged, it's not, was it preserved over time? It's how has it changed the perception? Like, how's the perception of it changed? And I think we have like a comedic gem now when back in the day, it wasn't that. It was new and it looked nice and it was like, whoa, this is really cool gameplay. And you ignore some of those translation things, but now it's like a new experience because you're reading through it and you're just like, what?
Yeah. Me in fourth grade that was a little less critical about some of those things probably would have really loved this game. Like really loved it. And maybe this is oversharing, but I specifically remember one of my ongoing like fantasy life as a kid expressions was that I would be a warrior monk that literally used my instrument as a weapon.
Hey, that's not oversharing. Right amount of sharing for this podcast, and I appreciate you. I appreciate you sharing.
Yeah,
that.
Absolutely.
So this game would have been your.
So I think it would have been right up my alley. Like I didn't care about storytelling then. I think as a fourth grade kid, this game would have just blown me away. It's fun. It's interactive when you do get to the dungeons. I'd have gotten pretty bored with all the cutscenes, but you have nothing else to do for an entire summer at that point. So you're playing this game no matter how slow it is. It can, you know, take 10 minutes to just show me myself standing around on a raft for no reason, because apparently that's how you fall in love or whatever. And I would have forgiven it. But I'm with you guys. I have a little bit of a harder time getting over those things today.
My childhood fantasy was becoming friends with a runaway princess and her pet pig.
That kills itself for you.
Spoiler alert, walks into a fire so that you can save the party.
Like, and it shows it getting roasted and then the tribe going around to eat the pig.
Yeah, awkward. Nolan, you mentioned something about just a few seconds ago. I think that's another thing that we talk about here at Age. I think the graphics is something that shines here. Like, I think the game sprites are big and detailed, full of color. I think it looks great for today.
I agree. And they had Moto Hagio? Yeah, right.
Well pronounced.
Yeah.
She is a pretty notable manga. How many words are we going to butcher? Gaia, artist. And really similar, or not similar, but reminded me how Chrono Trigger hired the DBZ artist. Like, this game kind of looks similar to Chrono Trigger to me, and I love it. I really like the art style. It's so detailed, and it's, like, even good for the SNES, I think. It's really good.
Yeah, I like it, too. I often knock Super Nintendo titles in favor of Genesis titles, just in terms of, like, color and look for that era of gaming. This one felt like it was a sweet spot right in the middle, where it wasn't overly, like, cartoony, but just felt, I don't know, good and authentic. I really enjoyed it.
So I think we're in agreement that the graphics look good today, but I think the music is one of the things that is somewhat polarizing about this game. I've seen some people say that they love it and compare it to, you know, just some of the other great musical numbers from other SNES JRPGs, and then I find some that don't really care for it and don't think it's that remarkable. Where do you guys stand?
I was wishy-washy even throughout what I was playing. There was moments I felt like it fit great and was polished and good, and then there were moments that I was like, this is kind of distracting and not really kind of vibing with what's going on. And so music, you need to be so good that it's not noticed until you notice it. And I noticed it, and that's a bad thing.
I mean, mine's not that confusing. It's just it wasn't good. Like, Square didn't develop this, and I think some elements that I expect from this genre were missing because of that. And I don't want to, like, bash Quintet, because, like, I don't think they're a terrible company or something. It's their game. But Square brings music to the table. And for me, I thought it was uninspired. Each area is unique and has its own track, but none of them were like, wow, this is really cool, really good. So yeah, I'm with you. I don't like it.
The game is easy to get your hands on even today. I mean, you can buy like the cartridge for less than $20. It's relatively easy to emulate. It's not been on any kind of like re-release stuff, so you can't really play it on anything like that, compilation. But again, if you want to play it, you can. And if you want to continue the series, there is a third. But again, I think it's very disconnected from the other two.
Yeah.
Final thoughts.
At the end of each and every one of our episodes, we determine whether or not this game gets our vote for New Game Plus status, which is our general thumbs up or thumbs down. Requires 2/3 of the vote to swing one way or another. Seriously, out of all of our conversation, I'm interested to see where we land with this one. Kenny, how about you start us off?
Yeah, it's a fair question in this case because I have been torn all week. I would go back and forth from having moments where I just loved playing the game to moments where I was sitting and waiting for it to poorly get through some story elements to let me get to playing a dungeon again. But in the end, I had enough fun playing the fun parts of this game. And maybe it's Super Nintendo and it just hits that sweet nostalgia spot for me or something. Or maybe it's that inner fourth grader I talked about that somehow understands this story, even though it's ununderstandable, that I enjoyed this game. It made me smile. There were a couple of moments of frustration. It's not perfect, but I'm going to say it actually gets New Game Plus status from me.
Interesting.
All right, there's one affirmative thumb up. I'm going to go to you, Nolan.
Okay. I watched the speedrun of this game this week. Pwexel, who's a notable speedrunner in the community, ran this at a GDQ.
Really? Recently or a long time
2016?
Ago?
2016.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know he played this game because I followed him for a long time. He does a lot of Final Fantasy.
I didn't know he played it either. I was kind of surprised, but it's worth a watch. I'll say that because when you strip this game of the story, aka mash through the text and get through all the boring parts, and you just do like the dungeons, and that's kind of the highlight of how you play it.
Yeah.
The game looks great and fun and would be. So that's great. I think you should speedrun it if you play it today. But if you do play it casually, I think you can enjoy it because it's funny how bad the story is. So it's like a unique NGP that I'm giving here because I think it's terrible in some regards, but it aged in a way that is funny to play as like just a joke. And the fun parts, the dungeons are good and quality. So yeah, I gave it New Game Plus, surprisingly.
I feel like those were the most backhanded compliments you've ever
given.
They
were, and they were intentionally backhanded, but that's what I feel.
That's so interesting. I should have gone second just for the tension. Yeah. I don't give this game my vote.
Fair.
So this game made me laugh, and this game made me laugh hard, but I think that was unintentional for the
build. It was.
Yeah, but at it, not with it.
Right. I was laughing at it. And it was kind of sad to me how poor the story was being told because there are so many good qualities about this game. You guys mentioned them, and that's why y'all ended up giving it your vote, because some of those qualities are actually the graphics are some of the best Super Nintendo graphics I've seen, honestly. The puzzles are challenging enough but light enough for me to enjoy. Even the character switches gives some depth there. There's so many good things about it. But for me, who likes the element of character and stories, mm-hmm. I could not give it my vote simply because the poorness, that's not a word, of those two elements outweigh the good qualities to where it doesn't make it an enjoyable title for me. So I actually say no, but because of you two guys, Illusion of Gaia Gaia does receive our New Game Plus certification.
Right. I think this is when we could have honestly landed on either side of the fence.
Yeah, I don't care.
And been completely
actually
justified.
I wouldn't have cared if it was no New Game Plus. I'm not passionate about this one, but I just gave my honest opinion. But the story is so hard to get past.
Too.
It's so hard.
Man.
But if you come in with the right attitude, you might have a lot of fun and laugh.
Yeah, you'll either get frustrated or you'll be laughing hard.
Oh man, this is one of the biggest bigger surprises for me. So Illusion of Gaia, there is our thoughts. What were your thoughts? We had some of our friends write in this week to ngppodcast@gmail.com or into our commentary channel on Discord and let us know what they thought about the game. Dan said, I've never known how to feel about Illusion of Gaia. It always fell a bit flat compared to some other action RPGs, which the SNES had in spades. It's a shame that everything doesn't always add up in the story. And at times, Will can be rather insensitive to his friends. Also, until this week, I had no clue that the game was a sequel to Soul Blazer.
Yeah, you wouldn't. Like, they didn't even try to. And I haven't played Soul Blazer, but come on. Like,
when you have the word illusion in your game name, you can kind of do whatever you want.
Was that what they were going for?
It's not how that works.
Bad form, though. I don't agree with that at all.
Amarillion wrote in and he said, Dear trio of NGPers, this game was my white well growing up. I rented this game many times to try and play through the whole thing. The main issue with renting RPGs back in the day was if you couldn't immediately re-rent the game, your saves were often written over. When Video Update finally went out of business, I bought the game used from them and still have it within my collection. This game had it all for me: a memorable soundtrack, excellent dungeon design, and intriguing puzzles that were not impossible. There was a decent yet convoluted story there too. I personally loved the way they had you switch between the different characters to make your way through the dungeons. It was a unique feature to the game that kept the game from ever getting boring, just playing Will all the time. I hope you all enjoyed playing this completely historically accurate representation of the wonders of the world. It will always get New Game Plus for me.
I know more about the Incans than I ever did. And I don't know if it's accurate though.
Man, so many unique things here. Like, what other JRPG do you go to the different wonders of the world, right?
Yeah, he said convoluted story. I think that's generous. It's
crazy. And he said with the story that there is a decent story there too. And there might be, maybe. But it is so deep. Like, it's going to be hard to dig that one out.
The dialogue, man. And the I didn't care about the characters, you know? Like, that's important for the genre.
Right. Well, thank you too for writing in. As always, you can send in your thoughts on the retro game of the week to ngppodcast@gmail.com or hop into our Discord. There's a commentary channel there. Each and every week we change that so that you can just easily submit your thoughts on the game right then and there. And we'd love to include your thoughts as a part of our podcast next week. But for now, it's time to randomly select what game we're going to be playing next. And we're moving away from our Patreon pool and we're going back to our retro master list, this massive list with hundreds of games on it that are 15 years old or older, any console, any genre. And from there, we are going to randomly select what game we're going to be playing over the next 7 days.
I'm feeling lucky.
We're staying in the RPG genre.
Really? Yeah.
But instead of SNES, mm-hmm. we're going to the PC.
That's scary. Huh.
Or good.
This game was released in 1999.
Wow, okay.
A single-player RPG for the PC that is...
That was so many letters.
Part of a series entitled Might and Magic. This is the seventh entry in the series called For Blood and Honor. Might and Magic 7 for Blood and Honor.
I think I played this. I may have even put this game on the Retro Master list. I don't know.
I'll have to go back and see. Is this number 7 as good as Final Fantasy's number 7? We'll have to see.
Heck no. 7 games? I don't even know Might and Magic. I mean, I've heard of it.
Kenny, do you remember anything about it? I feel like we're going to be playing Dungeons & Dragons.
I do remember some things about it, and I don't want to say anything about it, but I'm...
But I will.
I'm super hyped.
Okay.
But I'm worried.
Okay.
Well, I'm really worried if you're even a little bit worried.
No, I'm just worried about you guys because sometimes you're just...
No, I'm going
to
battle.
PC games are often hard to... older PC games are often hard to play nowadays. However, this one is on GOG. So if you want to swing by, you should be able to get it for cheap. And usually those games make it to where you're able to actually play it on modern computer hardware. So play along with us this week.
Also, join us in Discord this week. There you can discuss Might and Magic 7 or anything that you want to talk about gaming related or whatever. Doesn't matter. As long as it's not weird. Go to our Twitter. Click the Discord link to get invited.
To be clear, as long as it's not too weird. We do have to take a minute and say thanks to all our patrons who support the work we do here at NGP Podcast, especially our producer level supporters, Bradley, Zion, Gimbarino, and Phil. You guys rock. Thanks to all of you who put in submissions this week as well for our game of the week. It's always fun playing those. So appreciate you guys.
And we do want to welcome a new patron to our family.
Oh, I didn't even know this.
Yeah, so David joined our Patreon page and subscribed as well. So, hey, man, thank you so much for your support. Welcome to the family. Enjoy the additional bonus content.
Yeah, thanks so much.
As always, you can find us on our social media. That's Facebook and Twitter at NGP Podcast. Watch us on YouTube at New Game Plus Podcast or Twitch, and that's NGP Podcast as well. I guess I got to start adding that in there. Listen to us directly on any podcast provider of your choice. Make sure you subscribe to be the first to get new NGP episodes. And while you're at it, leave a kind rating and review. This episode and all of our others was edited and produced by our good friend Tom Tate. Join us in a few weeks on September 15th at 10 o'clock a.m. CST for our live stream celebration of our 3-year anniversary. Join us next week as we play Might and Magic 7 for Blood and Honor. Had to look it up. Until then, I'm still Dustin.
I'm pumped for this game.
I'm an herb.
And this has been New Game Plus.
Why?
I've done it 148 times. I don't know. I feel like I've got to change it up.